Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We know that if a country doesn't recognize minority rights and human rights, including women's rights, you will not have the kind of stability and prosperity that is possible. So we hope that as Egypt looks at its own future, that it takes advantage of all of the people's talents.
That was the second most admired woman in America, behind Oprah Winfrey, according to a new Newsweek poll. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has crisscrossed the globe and logged more miles and hit more countries in a shorter period of time than any of her predecessors as Secretary of State. And according to a new piece in the new Newsweek by Gail Temack-Lamon, Secretary Clinton is using her post to be the advocate-in-chief for women worldwide. So on this International Women's Day, did you know it was International Women's Day? Gail Lamon, fellow with the Council on Foreign Relations, the author of the forthcoming book, The Dressmaker of Khyr Khana, and the author of this week's Newsweek piece, The Hillary Doctrine, is here to talk about Secretary Clinton's effort to empower women and girls around the world as part of her job. Welcome to WNYC, Gail. Hello.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We've talked to women's rights advocates from Egypt and in the rest of the region. How exactly is Secretary Clinton trying to help their efforts within what is obviously a very politically complicated and chaotic transition in Egypt, and with all the various religious and other factions in the region vying for power and with different agendas toward women?
It was interesting. We spoke with her at the first time at the start of February. I mean, she was very keen to say, you know, we are watching and waiting. You know, there are no real answers at this moment about what is going to happen in terms of women's rights in New Egypt, the New Tunisia, in the region, which is obviously experiencing a great deal of upheaval. And then speaking with her just last Friday, you know, they are very clearly speaking with and talking with folks who are going to be part of the new Egyptian government about the need to include women. And it's a very fine line because you do not want to look as if you're doing too much or certainly imposing your own values, I think, from the secretary's perspective. But I think that there is a sense that someone of her stature is an advocate for women who are in the region and fighting for their own rights, and she is amplifying their voices.
How much are you concerned about possible retrenchment for women with the changes in some of these governments? You know, our next guest is going to be Jeff Greenfield from CBS News, and he's got a new book of alternate histories. And one of the alternate histories was, what if Ford was elected rather than Carter in 1976? And a lot of that has to do with what happens in Iran. But part of his laying the groundwork for that recalls how the Shah, evil as he may have been in other ways, was taking some steps toward women's rights back then. And then we know, of course, what happened under the Ayatollahs in Iran. Are you afraid of something like that around the Middle East now?
I think what is, heartening is to see women speaking up for themselves. I think you're going to see, I just read that there's an upcoming march among women in Egypt for their own rights. I think you see that around the region where women are really trying to come out and speak up for themselves. And I think that that is really the key. I don't think any of this will come from folks outside these the borders of these regions, simply saying that women should have rights, but bolstering women within these societies who already have been fighting for decades, really, to make sure that their voices are heard and to make sure that that their rights are respected. But I do think with any upheaval, there remains a very open question: who fills the power vacuum? I don't think the story is very different in Afghanistan either.
Your article is called The Hillary Doctrine. Is there a Hillary Doctrine?
It's interesting. I think there is, and it's very subtle and very quiet. If you weren't paying attention, you wouldn't really know just how much she has tried to weave the theme of women and women at the center of U.S. foreign policy rather than the periphery into every piece of work that she does, whether it's a foreign trip, going to Papua New Guinea or the Democratic Republic of Congo and making sure that women are heard, or whether it is a speech she gives, or this quadrennial, this QDDR document, not to get into too much State Department jargon, but this sweeping strategy document, which she's done for the first time, which is modeled off one the Pentagon does every 4 years, in which women are mentioned 133 times, women and girls.
Secretary Clinton's job, of course, as Secretary of State, is to be the chief diplomat, the chief representative of United States interests around the world. Does she have an argument, does she articulate one, for why empowering women and girls in other countries somehow enables national security in the United States or other American interests?
Yes, this is something that's been interesting. It's something actually that's among some of the blogs has been debated. You know, some people take issue with the way that she has framed these arguments. But if you're going to talk about Washington pragmatism, which I certainly think is very relevant because she wants to be heard in Washington and not tuned out as a do-gooder or someone who is too focused on only a single issue, which I think, you know, her argument is quite eloquent on, which is that this is a security issue because it's about creating more stable, more secure, more prosperous communities all around the world. And when you look at the statistics, the societies that include women, that really develop and extract women's talents, are more secure, more prosperous, more stable on the whole. And so I think that is her argument, and she is really making it on firmer national security terrain, as we talk about in the piece, rather than an appeal to people's better instincts.
I think a lot of people remember, as a turning point, the speech that Hillary Clinton gave as First Lady in Beijing in 1995. It was the fourth World Conference on Women. Here's a clip.
It is a violation of human rights when babies are denied food or drowned or suffocated or their spines broken simply because they are born girls.
Now, Gail, I remember that as really an outstanding moment in the Clinton administration era, Hillary in Beijing, 1995.
It was, and it was really a turning point, I think, for her. I mean, if you remember, those of us who covered some of the early days of the Clinton years as well, you remember this was a very rocky start for both her husband's administration and certainly for Secretary Clinton. And she went to Beijing, and a lot of people from her husband's administration did not want her to go. And she went saying, look, this is an important statement of human rights. And what she said at that time was fairly radical, which is that you cannot divide women's rights from human rights. This is not a special subsection or, you know, a special lane in the bowling alley. This is really a center stage of human rights. And that you cannot talk about human rights without thinking about half the world. And I think that speech really showed her, and we talk about this in the piece, it really showed her the power that she had in terms of the First Lady pulpit to amplify voices of people who otherwise would not be heard. And that speech continues to resonate. I spoke with any number of women, probably half dozen, who are now leaders around the world from Asia to Latin America to parts of Western Europe, who talk about how that speech really made an impact and spoke to them. And I guess, you know, the New York Times agreed and called it one of the finest moments of her First Lady reign.
You think that speech changed perceptions of her? You know, the early talk about her and health care and, you know, was she just positioning herself as somebody who baked cookies and, you know, all of that stuff. But that changed perceptions of her, a perception that perhaps continues to this day and helped set the stage for her widely popular appeal?
I think it helped set the stage. I think Washington, as you know, is very much its own ecosystem. So I don't know how much I think it actually changed the way Washington reporters perceived her at the time. And I don't really know how many Washington reporters were paying too much attention, and Washington politicians for that matter, we're paying too much attention to that Beijing speech. But globally, I think it was the beginning of the start. And I think for her personally and for her team, it was the beginning of the push to find this cause and to make it her own and to realize the impact that she could have. And I think it's one she carried with her much more quietly, obviously, in the New York Senate, because that wasn't part of her day-to-day duties, but one which has certainly risen to the fore in her tenure as secretary.
And as Secretary of State, apparently, she gets really close to the ground in some of her work on women's issues. You write about a woman in Cambodia who works with girls sold into prostitution who got a visit by Hillary Clinton. And this woman says that Clinton saved lives by making her work respectable in the eyes of the government. You want to talk about that?
You know, it's interesting talking to Somali Mam, who is an activist in Cambodia, who herself was sold into prostitution at a young age, was raped and abused for years, and then managed to get out and had returned to Cambodia to save other young women's lives and to rescue young women from prostitution and sexual abuse and slavery. And I think when you talk to the women who have worked one-on-one with Secretary Clinton, they feel this incredibly personal connection because she does, in their view, take risks to stand with people who may be very unpopular within their own government and who her stature can lend, you know, a great deal of credibility to. So if you talk to Somali Mam, she says, my government didn't ever want to pay attention to this issue of child slavery and sex abuse until Secretary Clinton came and shined the spotlight on it and made it really difficult to ignore. And there are women who say that, you know, women in Northern Ireland, women in other parts of Asia who say the same thing. Certainly the young woman who was married off at the age of 10 in Yemen, Najud, who's also in the piece. You know, these people feel a very personal connection to Secretary Clinton, in part because she has raised their stories to the level of the global stage.
Is there a shift in funding at the State Department or elsewhere in the Obama administration that reflects this priority on women and girls? And is there any pushback against her desire to have that?
You know, I think the funding question, this is an era of incredibly tight budgets all around. And so the funding question is one that is very sensitive and one where I think the dollars are there, but I don't think they're there in massive numbers. And it's also very hard to track because, as we mentioned in the piece, this is there only in 2010 did they start tracking programs that are actually aimed for specifically at women and girls. But there is, you know, a great deal of money going toward both global health programs and also human trafficking programs, as well as a number of initiatives such as small grants programs in Afghanistan and in the Middle East to support civil society and democracy. So I think the money is going there. And in terms of pushback, I think right now, because the dollar amounts have not been of the level to raise real hackles, you haven't seen a lot of pushback, in part, I think, because a lot of people haven't been paying attention to this story. It's all been happening fairly quietly, and you really did have to look at the sum of the parts to realize how much is going on.
So it's good that you and Newsweek are bringing some attention to this. Gail Tzimak-Lamon, who has an article in Tina Brown's new Newsweek this week, and today is International Women's Day, article called The Hillary Doctrine. Clearly, her role is mainly on the international stage as Secretary of State, and the United States offers far more gender equality than most countries. But I spoke to Senator Gillibrand yesterday, Clinton's successor, of course, in that Senate seat from New York, and she talked about a war on women here in the United States, as she put it, citing proposals to cut funding for Planned Parenthood and support for low-income women. There was a report from the Obama administration that showed the U.S. hardly in the lead when it comes to maternity leave and parental leave in general and some other things. Gillibrand talked about how women still make less on the dollar than men for doing the same jobs. Does Secretary Clinton seem to have any domestic gender equality issues on her plate, or is it just not in her role at all because she's Secretary of State?
Since she is very aware of these, this came up during interviews we did both times, talking about why women's issues around the world mattered versus women's issues within the domestic spectrum, and I think she sees them as very much connected. But I think at the moment, because of her role as diplomat in chief, she is really focused on where can she have an impact in her role, what is within her purview. I think when she was senator from New York, these issues probably occupied a great deal more of her daily agenda. But at the moment, I think if you look at her to-do list and this grids that she keeps, as we talk about in the piece, and the BlackBerry to-do list that she follows up on, I think because of her limited time in this role, however long she stays, and because of the impact she can have as Secretary of State, she tends to be fairly focused at the moment on the issue she can have an impact on as Secretary of State. Although I think she is very much focused and speaks at length about a lot of these issues, which Senator Gillibrand discussed in your conversation.
However long she stays was an interesting phrase that you just used. I've heard some speculation that when Robert Gates finally departs as defense secretary, maybe Hillary Clinton is in line for that. I don't know why she would want that as opposed to Secretary of State, but have you heard anything like that?
There is a lot of discussion in Washington about whether she would take on this role. So far, she is staying entirely mum and really saying that she is ready for a break from public life, first one in decades for her. And, you know, her husband joked recently, as we mentioned in the piece, that she covets the title of grandmother far more than anything else at the moment. But I think it's hard to say that someone with her inclination and sense of duty in terms of public service would say no. So I think stay tuned and we'll see what happens in the 2012.
But what would she want to accomplish? I mean, other than perhaps resume building or showing that a woman could do this or somebody who didn't come out of the military could do this, it seems to me there's so much more opportunity for changing the world as Secretary of State than as someone merely, if I can say merely, running the military.
Well, she has done a tremendous amount of job of work reshaping the State Department's processes to include women, and I think she has had an impact on that. I do not see her wanting to go to the Pentagon at the moment. But if, you know, to play the other side of this, someone who served, she did serve on Senate Armed Services Committee. She is very interested in military issues. She has gotten up to speed, you know, during the since the year 2000, since entering the Senate, on these issues. And I think that she does tend to have a very similar worldview to Secretary Gates. So I wouldn't rule it out entirely if
All
I
right.
had to say that there were no odds on it.
Gail Amon, fellow with the Council on Foreign Relations, author of the forthcoming book, The Dressmaker of Kairakana, and the author of the article in Tina Brown's new Newsweek, The Hillary Doctrine. Thank you so much.
Thank you.